Hello and welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. Oh, I'm glad you're with me. I'd suffer the embarrassment of giggle incontinence if it leaked out that you missed today's show. Consider consulting. Is consulting to nonprofits for you? Do you have the personality for it? What about marketing, pricing, and setting boundaries with clients? Julia Reich is owner of Stone Soup Creative, and Marlene Oliveira is principal of MoFlow, a communications consultancy. We talked at NTC 2015, the nonprofit technology conference. And top skills for your board. Software Advice has a report on what skills to look for as you recruit board members. Melissa McCormick is their market research manager. On Tony's Take Two, thank you, and Third Sector. We're sponsored by Opportunity Collaboration, the working meeting on poverty reduction that will ruin you for every other conference. Here is Consider Consulting from NTC.
Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of the Nonprofit Technology Conference 2015. We're in Austin, Texas at the Convention Center. Our hosts are N10, the Nonprofit Technology Network. With me are Julia Reich, she's the owner of Stone Soup Creative, and Marlene Oliveira, copywriter and communications consultant with MoFlow. Julia, Marlene, welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you on a busy conference day. Thank you. Your very interesting topic is considering consulting to nonprofits. I like that a lot. We don't do a lot of career topics on nonprofit radio, so that's why I was very much anxious to have you and talk to you.
Yeah.
Julia, let's start with you. What do I need to be thinking about generally, because we have plenty of time together, if I'm thinking about making this transition to consulting? What are some of the things I should be thinking about?
Well, when Marlene and I were putting together the session, we identified five different main topics that we're going to cover.
Okay.
And one of them is actually making the leap and what to think about when you're first starting out.
Yeah.
And so we both came up with our own tips of what we thought would be important. And so I'll just share one of my tips.
Sure, too. Go ahead.
And it's going to sound really obvious, but when you're first starting out as a consultant, I think it's important to be professional. And there's a lot of different ways to exude professionalism. And one of those things is really easy to do, and that's get a professional headshot. So, you know, you can use something from your iPhone or whatever, but...
Selfie is not really doing it.
Yeah. And I see a lot of people do that, and I think that they're kind of... It's kind of an injustice. I think that they could really be presenting just a better presentation of themselves if they got a professional headshot done. And there's actually right here at in the conference, in the science fair, they're actually taking professional headshots.
Yes, about two booths over.
Right.
Flux, FLUXX, our neighbors, are taking professional headshots.
So there's no excuse.
Right. If you're here at NTC. But if you're not, and we're in such a visual society, and the web is so visual, when people go to your about page or your bio page, the first thing they're going to do is look at your picture before they start reading. So it's your first impression in a lot of ways.
Right.
All right. Marlene, you have a tip?
Yeah, for sure. I think when you're thinking about whether or not to move into consulting, my advice is to think about two things in particular. One is your personality and whether you have an entrepreneurial type of personality, whether you're going to be able to learn the skills that are outside of your specialty in order to run a business. Also within your personality, whether you're a worrier or not, whether you're going to be able to keep an even keel when the business is slow.
Right,
or
because
when
cash flow, we need to know that cash flow and income fluctuations are very, very much a part of having your own consultancy.
Totally a part of it.
Okay.
And so I kind of think that you should potentially not be pursuing this if you're a real worrier.
Yeah.
You know?
Some real introspection.
Yeah, you got to think about your personality and whether you want to run a business, because it's a big move from having a paycheck. And then the other thing is to think about your finances. So you touched on it. I think in my experience, it worked well to have a good cash flow, good cash reserve before launching the business. So I think, save up for it if you can. Spend some time saving up so that, once again, you can weather the down times. and that you'll make good decisions. You won't just take any client for any reason.
Yeah.
So I think thinking about your finances and thinking about how good you are with money, you know, Julie and I have talked about, you know, are you a good saver? When the money does come in, do you spend it all? So those are things I think you should think about in terms of your personality.
I think we want to avoid making an impulsive decision,
mm-hmm.
because all of a sudden our job sucks. Something has really just happened that we just can't tolerate. So I'm going off on my own.
Yes. Actually, that is something that we talked about as well, as your motivation. Is it what you said?
Yes.
You know, it seems like the easiest way out of a bad situation. Or do you really want to be a business owner?
Okay. Julie, you want to share another tip? You said you had to each came up with a couple. Anything else? Or around the motivation? Any opening question tips?
Well, I would just add to what Marlene said. When I first went out on my own, a lot of people would say to me, oh, I could never do that. I would just be watching television all the time. Or, you know, going shopping. And, you know, my personality is well suited to being a consultant and being self-employed because I'm just really self-motivated. And, you know, I have to make a living. So I'm not going to waste my time, you know, going shopping and watching television. And so it's just, I know that part of my personality is motivated enough to work. All right. And I guess that's going back to being professional. You know, I'm sitting in my office in front of my computer, basically Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, setting those hours.
Some more introspection, but also recognizing that the need to pay bills is quite a motivation. So you may think that, or you may be on the fence about whether you're disciplined enough.
Right.
But recognize that you're going to have bills and you are going to want to make money to pay them. So that should be some help to you.
Right. Discipline. That's a good way of putting it.
Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, if you say you're a total slouch and you know for a fact you're not going to do it, then this is not the right move for you.
Okay. Although I can say I kind of learned this one the hard way a little bit, where the year I launched my business was also an Olympic year. I watched a few too many Olympic events.
Did your income suffer?
And I mean, it was mostly during a quiet time. It was during the summer. But I did realize that I could have been building my business instead and started to build that structure and that discipline in a more defined way for myself. Okay. Started to structure it in.
What year was that? Which Olympics?
2008.
All right. And how long have you been in business, Julia?
Since 2001.
Okay. What's something else? Well, can I presume that marketing is one of the areas of importance?
Absolutely.
Who wants to start with marketing ideas? How do we get this thing launched?
You can go first.
All right. Well, I have just a few of the things that have worked for me that I think are potentially surprising to people. I mean, I think you need to do what you'll enjoy doing and do what, over time, you'll figure out what works, but a lot of people cringe when I say I have obtained some of my favorite and best clients by either cold calling or sending letters.
Really?
Absolutely. Especially in that first year. I think, you know, nobody wants to pick up the phone and do that, and I didn't want to either. I don't mind it as much as other people, but I just did. I just made a list, and I made a certain number of people I'd call on certain days. It's good to schedule marketing days. That's another tip that you will spend on marketing your business. And yes, between those calls and those letters, over time, I did plant the seeds, and they did take a while to grow, but I got some of the best clients, my favorite work, because they responded to that letter or that phone call.
I wonder if that's because you were very careful about who you put on the list.
I definitely was.
Did you spend a lot of time on research?
Absolutely. So much. So much more than the writing and the calling.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But Marlene is also a writer professionally, so I'm sure it was an extremely well-written letter.
Okay. Still, that's not what I would expect.
Mm-hmm.
I would, all these years in your consultancy, since 2008, I would have expected you to say it comes from referrals mostly.
And that's my number two. I mean, actually, between that kind of pitching, sort of cold calling or letter writing, and referrals, that's where most of my business has come. And I think referrals are more, account for more, but that was just a surprising one, the first one that I mentioned. And I've kept up more with referrals than with letter writing and phone calls.
Okay.
But yes, absolutely, referrals. And when it comes to referrals, similar, I think people should be disciplined and structured about it. You make a really targeted list. What you do is you approach your clients that you like working with, and you let them know, I'd like to work with more awesome clients like you. And I'm guessing you know like-minded people. And I think for there, too, you set a number. How many referrals will I ask for per month, say? and make it a point, put it on your calendar, ask for those referrals, and pre-write an email that they can forward on, that your contacts can easily forward on. Make it easy.
Very, very simple, just like all our sharing tools on the web. Okay.
You're tuned to Nonprofit Radio. Tony Martinetti also hosts a podcast for the Chronicle of Philanthropy. Fundraising Fundamentals is a quick, 10-minute burst of fundraising insights published once a month. Tony's guests are expert in crowdfunding, mobile giving, event fundraising, direct mail, and donor cultivation. Really, all the fundraising issues that make you wonder, am I doing this right? Is there a better way? There is. Find the Fundraising Fundamentals archive at TonyMartinetti.com. That's MARTIGNETTI. Remember, there's a G before the N. Thousands of listeners have subscribed on iTunes. You can also learn more at the Chronicle website, philanthropy.com. Fundraising Fundamentals, the better way.
Back to you. Marketing tips.
Well, I think when you're thinking about positioning yourself as when you're first starting out, that you want to position yourself as an expert. I mean, obviously, you have an expertise in whatever it is that you want to consult about. So I don't think that that would actually, you know, be an issue. But, you know, you kind of want to just stake a claim and say, I am this expert with this specialty, and position yourself that way.
Okay.
And have the confidence to do that.
All right. Anything else marketing-wise? I mean, marketing is pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
Julia, you mentioned professionalism and the professional headshot. Obviously, all your marketing materials should be professional. Might be worth investing in a professional writer if you're not one, designer if you're not one.
Definitely.
I mean, you should be investing in your business.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yep. I would say that in terms of marketing, something that I think has worked well for both of us is sort of building a network and developing a community and sharing your knowledge with that community. So whether that's doing blog posts or webinars, or Marlene does tweet chats, different kinds of presentations, but sharing your expertise with the community and building it up that way is a good way to just build your clientele and your prospects.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Julia, what is your consulting? What do you do?
I do graphic design and brand strategy.
Okay. And Marlene, you're a professional writer?
I do copywriting and communications planning. So basically, blog and newsletter planning, it's not writing.
Strategy, yeah. Not writing.
If it's not writing, it's those two things.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're covering it. All right. Mm-hmm. So we have writing and design.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Where should we go after marketing?
Well, I did want to just say one more thing about marketing, because Julia led to it. Okay. And a lot of those efforts, I know for both of us, lead toward building an email list. And that's for me, it's a focus now that hasn't been a focus prior to now. But it also fits with that building a community, having people who want to hear from you and are waiting for your help and your tips and your information, and keeping yourself top of mind with them. So I just wanted to add that about the email.
All right. Excellent. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Where should we go after marketing?
Well, we didn't finish talking about one thing that I love talking about a little bit, and it's about working from home.
One of the advantages.
Yeah, and the productivity side for me. Because I think it's both the luxury and the challenge of being self-employed that you're leaving the world of meetings. If you work in a nonprofit, you'd probably spend 40% of your day in meetings, and maybe I'm underrepresenting that, but you can get so much done, but you do have to be disciplined. So I just wanted to mention the idea about setting boundaries for yourself and for others. And I'm very pointed about that. You know, there are certain things I won't do while I'm writing. I won't let internet distractions, I won't let social media, I schedule time for those. Those are put to the side until I've been productive enough. And setting boundaries with people around you, because sometimes those friends who have more flexibility in their life get excited that they can call you during the day, or they can pop in, or the lunch thing that Julia mentioned, that they think you're available now to fit into their social calendar. So you just need to decide what you're going to allow in, if anything, during a work day, and be deliberate about that.
Boundaries. Mm-hmm. Very important. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I've had an office outside of the house, and I've had an office inside my house, and I like them both for different reasons. Pros and cons for both.
Okay. How about pricing? Can we move to pricing? What advice do we have around pricing?
Well, I have a few tips. I find it hard to give anyone advice about what they should do with pricing, but these are the things that these are sort of more smaller picture tips that I use. Well, the big picture point is to, if you're launching your business as a professional, then charge professional fees. It doesn't mean charging...
Hear.
It doesn't mean charging a ton, but it doesn't mean trying to compete with employees. And related to that is to get away from hourly pricing, because clients will compare you to staff and what they're paying staff.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You're recommending avoiding hourly pricing.
I don't think I've charged hourly since that first year, since 2008, when I realized that for me, project... based pricing works better. Clients, they like the predictability of it. They know what they're paying, and I build in the steps that it's going to take to get there. So it's kind of, I like to use the analogy, if you know, you had kids say they'd come mow your lawn for a $10 fee, or you know, $4 every 10 minutes, and you have no idea how long this kid is going to take. And I think my clients like that predictability about it. A few other tips are, I think you should always give a ballpark first to see if you're speaking the same language. Maybe you're not even in the same world.
Yeah.
And never quote in person. Like, always have the conversation, go back and think about what that really should be, and come back in writing later.
Yeah, it can be sometimes hard to resist the impulse to be thoughtful and answer the question.
Absolutely.
Well, what would this cost? You know, you always have to step back. Let me think about it. Let me put something in writing for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually sufficient to get the person to agree to
wait
a few days or a week for something more.
Mm-hmm. And they appreciate that you're thinking
thoughtful.
About it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, more thoughtful. Yeah.
You know, with anything that we do, we're thinking about time, but we're also thinking about our particular expertise, whether we're a right fit. We're probably building out timelines for clients. They want us to go think about what it really is. And so, yeah.
It's customized for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
More tips around pricing? Anything you want to add, Julia?
I wanted to add on to something Marlene said about not pricing by the hour, because I think it's also a perception thing. You know, if a client is paying you by the hour, I think they're more inclined to perceive you as a vendor, you know, like a, you know, someone who mows the lawn.
That's not really who we are
and what we do. I feel like I'm more of a valued partner with my clients' projects, and I'm really trying to understand what their goals and objectives are, and I want to help them. I want to be honestly, genuinely helpful to help them achieve their goals, and I'm helping them plan and strategize, and they're not going to get that from an hourly
mm-hmm.
rate.
Yeah.
And
okay.
I'm sure you both of you would come across this, that you want to be helpful. So I don't want my clients to hesitate to call me or ask me to do something because they don't want to spend that other additional hourly fee.
Yeah.
I want them to
yeah.
feel like they can talk to me to get it right, do what it takes to get it right.
And then if there is a need for an additional fee,
absolutely.
Then you can say, you know, I certainly can help you with that, but it's outside what we talked about initially. This is another... thought about boundaries, different than what we were talking about, but still
absolutely.
Important about boundaries. Yeah, that's a little outside what we've agreed. If you like, we can add that on.
Absolutely. And that goes back to those careful quotes. You know, when I build a quote, I build in exactly what steps are included in that fee. And if it does carry on a little longer, then we might talk about an additional fee. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. One of the topics I think you're going to discuss is establishing your niche mm-hmm. and identifying yourself as that within that niche. How do we do that with our potential clients?
Julia has some great thoughts. I'll lead over to her about the consultant versus freelancer kind of role. But for me, when you're first evaluating your niche, we say niche, Canadian.
Oh, yeah, okay. You could say niche. It's okay.
I think, you know, there are a few things to just consider. Again, you have to find your way along the way. And we've talked about how did we each find our way? Because we can't pin it down to any one thing, you know. But you're looking at, obviously, your expertise and your experience and your skills. You're looking at what kind of nonprofit you want to serve. If you want to focus in on a subsector, and you probably should, unless your skill that you're offering is very specific. You want to just think about what motivates you, how you can bring your personality into your business, and how that can influence what you have to offer. So That's kind of, those are my thoughts around establishing your brand and the shape of your business.
And of course, your marketing materials materials need to support all that,
mm-hmm.
and be consistent, just like we have a consistent message within nonprofits. Our own marketing message
absolutely
needs to be consistent. Okay. Julia?
Well, my answer is more sort of about the terminology that I might use to define what I do.
Okay.
And so now I'm using the term consultant, but I haven't always been comfortable using that term. So, I mean, when you think about graphic designers and graphic design firms, you probably don't think of them as being consultants in the typical sense of the word. And you're right, because I do have a more of a creative agency hat, and with graphic design projects, you know, and their you know, project fee. And I work with a team of people, you know, like a website, for instance, and I work with developers mm-hmm. and designers mm-hmm. and content writers. But there is also, I am also a consultant because I do brand strategy and I work with my clients one-on-one. And so I am wearing that more of that consultant hat, but I also do trainings and workshops and things like that. So in that sense, I'm more of a consultant. So I guess when you're talking about establishing your brand and your niche, you know, whether you call yourself a consultant or an agency or a freelancer or a coach, I'm not sure it really matters. I mean, maybe the clients don't even really care, as long as you are positioning yourself so that the client that you want to reach knows that you're the person to call in their time of need.
And that may take some tweaking.
Right.
Yes.
Right. I'm still tweaking. I've been in business for 14, 15 years. I'm still tweaking.
You don't always get the clients that exactly in the sweet spot that you want.
Right.
Yep.
And you might change over the years. You know, I've been tweaking when I started.
Good
right
point.
Away.
Your own interests may change.
You know, I actually was I was helping with anything that fell under communications, because that was my background. It was overall communications management within a nonprofit. And in the first few months, I decided, let's focus on content, because I think clients know they need it and they don't want to write it themselves. And then I did that for several years. And in the last couple of years, I thought, you know, I still do that, but I can help more nonprofits by doing more things like this chat that Julia mentioned. Now, that's not for compensation. I do that for free. But I wanted to sort of change who I was in the marketplace. And I offer more training and more webinars. And I'm developing a course. So it's always evolving. I assume it will always evolve for me.
Mm-hmm. That's actually the fun part of it. It's creative to be self-employed, to be a consultant. You're always trying to think of new ways to do things, and better ways to do things, and try new things.
A Twitter chat is a great example, because it sets you up as an expert in the area, mm-hmm. as a convener of others
absolutely.
Within your profession.
As a guide and a helper.
Within the niche, yes, a resource, a guide, all that, mm-hmm. all that. Within the niche that you've selected, all very good, I think, for long-term credibility. Have you ever seen anything directly... business come from the Twitter chat directly?
You know, it's a good question, because some of the things I do in that domain, I think, keep me top of mind, but they don't result in a phone call.
Yeah, which is fine. Well, I think that's fine.
So I think it's someone who knows about the rest of it, or has been to my website, or has met me through a referral, and then they see the other activity, and that gives it a boost. That just keeps me top of mind. I feel that way for the chat. But what I find with the chat specifically is also that it creates sort of... you know, my own, even though I'm a business, my ambassadors on social media, people who are more loyal, more willing to share what I'm providing, whether it's blog posts or that kind of thing. So that's a definite benefit that I've had from that.
Yes, yes. Your ambassadors on social media. Love that.
Yes.
Yeah. It's very good in all those ways. Yeah, well put, well put. Mm-hmm. I've been doing this show for 4.5 years, and only within the past year, I'd say, has it led to calls related to business.
Oh, interesting.
So really, you know, it took a good 3 years, I'd say, before that started happening. And it's a love. I mean, I just, it's a joy. Great. I love doing the show. But that's just like an added benefit.
Mm-hmm. A lot of marketing efforts are like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a long cycle.
Long term. Right. I do planned giving consulting, by the way. That's mm-hmm. planned giving fundraising. All right. So we still have another like 3 minutes or so together. What else do you want to talk about?
Well, one of the things we're going to be sharing in our session tomorrow is about lessons learned along the way. I don't know if you want to kick that off.
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead, Julia.
Sure. So we were going to wrap up with lessons learned along the way. And when I was thinking about what I wanted to say about that, it's really more about sort of something I've learned about myself that I'm not very good at, and just acknowledging that I'm not very good at it.
More introspection.
More introspection.
A lot of introspection as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the lessons I've learned about myself along the way is that I really hate to talk on the phone. Like, I think I'm phobic, Like, I will talk on the phone. You know, if a client wants to talk on the phone or one of my strategic partners wants to talk on the phone, I will do it. But I will almost never pick up the phone and initiate a call.
All right. So you're definitely not doing the cold calling marketing.
I'm doing cold.
Marlene started.
Right. I'm doing cold emailing.
Okay.
But I would rather clean out my refrigerator than pick up the phone.
Okay.
And I think that's really held me back. Mm. You know, I don't think it's a good thing.
All right, but just at least you've identified it,
right?
Yeah, and focus on what works.
So you're not gonna force yourself to do cold call marketing,
right?
All right. Lessons learned, Marlene.
For me, the big one is learn to say no. You know, say no if it's not in your budget, if it's not according to your fees, and wait for the client that will pay your fees. Say no if it doesn't feel right or if it's not the right fit. For me, I say no when it's not a nonprofit, because other people hear about me and they ask me, small businesses. And I said, really, my passion is focusing on working with nonprofits. So that's where I keep it. And it's not to say not to be at least a little flexible and work outside your comfort zone and try new things, but just understand it's okay to say no when it doesn't feel good, so that the more you say no, the more you're actually building the business you want instead of the business that is just kind of coming around.
Yes, letting it evolve organically based on what comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have you said yes unwisely?
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah. This is a big lesson learned along the way. And I don't know why, you know, I think it's just a coincidence, but every time I took a large corporate client, it didn't go well.
A lot of money in those, isn't there?
Yeah. I mean, actually, that's not always true. I was surprised to hear them nickel and dime with me more than a nonprofit might. But it's the common thread that whenever I took a large corporate client, like once a year for the first couple of years, something would go wrong. It would either be a bad relationship or they wouldn't pay on time. So I just took it as a sign. You know, or they paid, by not on time, I mean like 4 months later. But I took it as a sign that I've got to start saying no, because even when it came in, someone asked me to copyright about nickel mining, or I don't know the subject, I don't know the people. I should have said no. Why did I say yes?
Yeah. All right, we're going to leave it there.
Cool.
All right?
Okay, great.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, my pleasure. Julia Reich is the owner of Stone Soup Creative, and Marlene Oliveira is copywriter and communications consultant, MoFlow, MoFlow. Ladies, thank you again.
Thank you.
This is Tony Martinetti, nonprofit radio coverage of NTC 15, the Nonprofit Technology Conference. Thanks so much for being with us.
Julia Reich has a very spotless refrigerator, sounds like. Live listener love, let's start domestic right here. Philadelphia, PA, the city of brotherly love. Live listener love to Philadelphia. Lexington, Kentucky, Langhorne, PA, Toronto in Canada, San Francisco, California, Marquette, Michigan. Live listener love to all the live listeners going abroad. Italy, haven't had you, I don't think, before, or it's been a long time. Buongiorno. I wish we could see the city, but we cannot see your city. I'm sorry. Reservoir, Australia, Tokyo, Japan, Konnichiwa, Seoul, South Korea, multiple, always Seoul, South Korea checking in. Thank you. Annyeonghaseyo. Buenos Aires in Argentina and Nanjing in China. Ni hao. Podcast pleasantries to everybody listening in the time shift, whatever device that might be, whatever day, time, whatever month you may even be listening to this May podcast, pleasantries to you. And the affiliate affections, of course. We love our affiliates throughout the country. Affections to each affiliate listener. Tony's Take Two and top skills for your board are coming up. First, opportunity collaboration. It's a week-long unconference in Ixtapa, Mexico, around poverty alleviation. It's for nonprofits, also impact investors, social entrepreneurs, grant makers, researchers, academics, and corporations. It's in October. As of today, it is 76% sold out. In fact, I got to get my registration in. Amy Sample Ward is going to be there also. If your work is related to poverty reduction anywhere in the world, check it out. OpportunityCollaboration.net. I thank you very much for loving Nonprofit Radio. Your love keeps me going on cold, snowy nights when I have no heat or electricity. It's a tough city here in New York, but your support gets me through. Actually, I have actually plenty of heat and hot water. Sometimes I have to crack the windows open. It's money that I could use. You can send money, because the love is no good if I don't have the money. So what the hell is it? So I can't go out for nice dinners. Can't go on trips. Love is not going to be enough. I can't be Golden Corral and Applebee's. I can't do those all the time. Although Golden Corral does actually have good salad choices. I appreciate those. But you get the message. No, but actually, I am very, very grateful for the love that you show for Nonprofit Radio. week in, week out. Really, it's almost five full years. We're coming up. And my video this week is a thanks for recent praise that I've gotten from listeners. You can hear I got some quotes there. And the video is at tonymartinetti.com. And I do thank you very much. Third Sector Today at thirdsectortoday.com. Amy DeVita runs it, and she has lots of contributors. Not like my site. She actually welcomes other opinions. Third Sector Today blogs tips, insights, best practices for the community. They have a podcast. Maria Semple has been on the podcast. And Amy DeVita, stop stealing my guests. Don't even try to get Maria Semple as a regular. It's not going to happen. She's exclusive nonprofit radio. Anyway, thirdsectortoday.com, a valuable resource, curated with an open mind. I hate that. And that is Tony's Take Two for Friday, 8th of May, 18th show of the year. I'm feeling a little feisty this afternoon. I don't know why that is. I don't know. But I'm not going to take it out on Melissa McCormick. She is a market research manager at Software Advice. She establishes and enforces standards and best practices for research and analysis. She oversees the regular publication of original primary research on the role of software and technology across many industries. Her research has been cited in Quartz, Information Week, Electronics Weekly, CIO.com, and other outlets. Software Advice is a resource for software buyers. They provide detailed reviews and research on thousands of software applications. They're at softwareadvice.com and at NPO Soft Advice. Melissa McCormick, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks, Tony. Good to be here.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have a researcher, and rarely do I get in someone's bio that they are an enforcer. What is that? Do you smack knuckles with rulers, or is it like stockades or waterboarding?
I'm really not at liberty to say. I could tell you, but
I'll
kill you.
Oh, these are company secrets. Oh, this is proprietary. You have proprietary
no,
methods.
I kind of help establish and make sure folks are following our guidelines for conducting research and analysis.
Now, are researchers typically like a group of anarchists? They'll do whatever they please unless there's an enforcer?
Not my researchers.
Because there is an enforcer. So researchers, they get a little loose-handed if they're not reined in? Is this true among the research community?
You know, not so much that. It's just there are lots of methods and methodological approaches. So mm-hmm. keeping everybody on the same page so that we're consistent.
Okay. All right. So we know the research coming out of Software Advice is high quality.
It is enforced, yeah.
Okay, that's your responsibility. All right. So how about this survey on board skills? Why was this a focus area?
Sure. So, you know, through other research that we've conducted and just talking to folks at nonprofits that are looking for software solutions, we've kind of observed that nonprofits are a little bit slower to adopt new technology. I think there are a lot of reasons for that. You know, budget obviously being a big one. Maybe just lack of prior experience with software and technology. But it sort of occurred to us that board members are in kind of a unique position to help guide perhaps the exploration of tech options.
Mm-hmm.
So having tech-savvy board members could, in turn, help nonprofits improve their operations and the way they interact with software and technology. So that was kind of our hypothesis. And the reason that,
was that
we
your
conducted
H,
the
is,
survey.
Is that called, is that H1? Do we still use that terminology, H1? Hypothesis number one?
You know, I actually don't use that terminology.
You don't?
But,
okay, see, it's outdated. Well,
sure, let's call it H1.
No. I took statistics in 1982, so H1 is probably outdated now. It's probably something else. I don't know. Okay, we used to call it H1, H2, and then you would try to prove these, and there was something called confidence intervals. I'm sorry. Okay.
Yep.
Okay, does that still exist? Do confidence intervals still exist?
Yep.
They do. Okay. All right. I'm sorry. A little digression. I'm trying to show off that I know something. Go ahead. Okay. So you had your hypothesis. You don't have to call it H1. You had this hypothesis about technology adoption being, I guess, a little quicker for nonprofits if they had savvier board members. Is that basically it?
Yeah. That was just, it occurred to us that would be one entry point. So one kind of way that change could be enacted would be through kind of a technology progressive board. So we wanted to explore that idea and just kind of the broader impact that a board could have, and how nonprofits go about recruiting board members and how they should go about recruiting board members. So it kind of morphed into a bigger topic than purely the software and technology, though that's kind of where it started, and turned into just this look at, you know, from a nonprofit's perspective, what should you be looking for in a board member? And on the other side of that coin, from a board member's perspective, what should you be looking at in a potential board to join?
Yeah. So you looked at it, right. You said both sides. So what are people looking for out of board service? And we'll get a good chance to talk about that. And how can boards use that information to promote board service? I'm sorry, how can nonprofits use that to promote board service?
Exactly.
Okay,
right.
Cool. All right. And what was the... which methodological choice did you choose among the wide array open to professional researchers?
So we conducted an online survey of a little over 1,500 people. So that was kind of the quantitative approach. We also did some expert interviews. So, you know, quantitative is great, especially with a big sample size. You can kind of get a degree of certainty about the results, but we really wanted to get a little color to those results, so we also did some qualitative interviews with what I call subject matter experts, folks in the nonprofit world who have been dealing with board members and topics related to boards and technology in general for a long time.
Oh, interesting. And then how do you, as a researcher, how do you, I don't know what to say, like score those interviews? You call, they're obviously qualitative, as you said.
Sure.
How does that get done? I'm using that term
a little bit loosely. The report that we published drew most heavily on the quantitative results. So we did a lot of charts and graphs, and then really used the commentary from the interviews we conducted as just kind of quotes within the report, and a means of almost kind of gut checking our own analysis that we'd done as well.
Hmm. Okay. And I see those quotes are in the report.
Yeah, a lot of them are. Yeah. So we kind of tied together the broad themes from the discussions we had with those folks into the key takeaways that we'd already identified from the survey results.
I was not interviewed, as I recall.
That was obviously an oversight on the part of
Not coach her to say that. I didn't coach her. I implicitly begged her to, but I didn't say it. I didn't say it explicitly. Okay. Next time. Okay. There'll be other opportunities. All right. So what do we find? Let's look at it from the nonprofit perspective. What should nonprofits be promoting as board service values to recruit?
Sure. So one of the biggest, I guess, kind of most decisive findings was that people join boards for personal fulfillment. And that's perhaps not really terribly surprising. You know, obviously, these folks are giving of their time and their money. So they want to care about the cause that they're giving to. But personal fulfillment was number one on the tops of folks' lists.
Okay. Let me get a question in about that now.
Sure.
Do we have to be concerned about self-reporting bias, that people would say choose the altruistic fulfillment choice over networking opportunities or, you know, something more more self-serving?
Sure. Yeah, that definitely comes into play. You know, it was far and away the number one pick, so I think we still have a degree of certainty there, but it's probably safe to assume that consciously or unconsciously, folks are kind of elevating their altruistic nature, as you said. But you know, I think it also makes sense and kind of was validated by the folks we spoke with that, you know, this is a commitment. People want to really care about what the nonprofit stands for if they're going to be dedicating so much of themselves to it.
Okay. Now it's clear why I'm on no boards.
But to your point about, you know, networking, we did get folks saying acquiring new skills was important to them, honing leadership skills, networking and meeting new people. Those were all other cited benefits, commonly cited benefits.
Yeah. Okay. Back to the top one, the personal fulfillment. What is it those elements that they're looking for? Is that satisfying the personal fulfillment that they're seeking?
So I think there are a lot of components to that, and that's something our survey didn't actually explore very deeply. So potential for future research opportunities, I suppose. But I think it's that personal fulfillment in the sense that, you know, I am acquiring new skills or meeting new people, but also in the sense that I'm contributing to the greater good. So, you know, other survey results included that people really want to see the impact of what they're doing in the nonprofit and the impact that the nonprofit is having on its community. So I think that certainly ties into personal fulfillment as well. Folks want to feel like they're contributing to an organization that is contributing to community.
I also saw reliability and accountability mentioned.
Yeah, so I think those terms specifically came up in the context of, you know, what skills should you look for in potential board members.
Okay.
We kind of explored two different avenues with that, one being more kind of professional experience and even almost personality-based skills, and another being technology-based skills. So when it comes to just professional experience and personal skill sets, accountability, reliability, those ranked on the list.
Okay. We have just about a minute and a half or so before we take a break, Melissa.
Why don't we
go into a little bit about some of the tech skills that are sought after? What are we looking for?
Sure. So a little over half of the folks we surveyed mentioned a specific type of software in some capacity or another. So fundraising software, obviously a big one, some kind of experience with systems for donor management. But the number one that came up across the board that everyone said was important was basic computer skills. Again, not super surprising, but that would include stuff like email.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You know, that's got to be there. Right.
Yeah, exactly. So something really foundational to the way nonprofits conduct business.
Email, documents, spreadsheets.
Yep. General kind of office productivity tools, you know, like your Microsoft Word and Excel and that sort of thing, calendar tools. That's obviously critical. But what was kind of interesting, and I think what was reflected in the professional skills that we saw being requested, was just the diversity of the types of tech skills folks are looking for. So,
yeah,
I mentioned,
you know,
fundraising. I mentioned break time.
We're gonna take a break, but hold that thought because it's critical. Diversity is critical, obviously, to boards, and we'll get to that diversity of skills and continue right after this.
Like what you're hearing on Nonprofit Radio? Tony's got more. On YouTube, you'll find clips from his stand-up comedy, TV spots, and exclusive interviews. Catch guests like Seth Godin, Craig Newmark, the founder of Craigslist, Mark Echo of Echo Enterprises, Charles Best from DonorsChoose.org, Aria Finger of DoSomething.org, and Naomi Levine from New York University's Hyman Center on Philanthropy. Tony tweets, too. He finds the best content from the most knowledgeable and interesting people in and around nonprofits to share on his stream. If you have valuable info, he wants to retweet you. During the show, you can join the conversation on Twitter using hashtag nonprofitradio. Twitter is an easy way to reach Tony. He's at Tony Martinetti, MARTIGNETTI. Remember, there's a G before the N. He hosts a podcast for the Chronicle of Philanthropy. Fundraising Fundamentals is a short, monthly show devoted to getting you over your fundraising hurdles. Just like Nonprofit Radio, Tony talks to leading thinkers, experts, and cool people with great ideas. As one fan said, "Tony picks their brains and I don't have to leave my office." Fundraising Fundamentals was recently dubbed the most helpful nonprofit podcast you have ever heard. You can also join the conversation on Facebook, where you can ask questions before or after the show. The guests are there too. Get insider show alerts by email. Tony tells you who's on each week and always includes links so that you can contact guests directly. To sign up, visit the Facebook page or TonyMartinetti.com.
Hi, I'm Kate Pala, Executive Director of Dance New Amsterdam, and you're listening to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%.
All right, Melissa, let's keep talking about diversity. What more can we say about that?
Sure, yeah. So I'm probably going to throw that word around a whole lot.
Okay.
Diversity, kind of a theme that came up across a couple different topic areas that we covered. So I mentioned with respect to technology skills and software skills, folks on boards were telling us that the most important stuff was really a lot of stuff. So CRM, donor management kind of tools, tools for managing your website, fund accounting, obviously a big one, and fundraising tools in general I mentioned already. And that was kind of echoed when we looked at, so not the technology side, but the professional skills that people thought were most important.
Right.
That was really interesting because it was almost an even mix when we asked people for the single most important. We've got a pie chart with a bunch of pieces of pie that are very similar in size. The number one that kind of had a little edge over the next few was fundraising, so experience fundraising. But others included, just past experience with a similar type of nonprofit, so relevant volunteer experience. Professional services kind of experience, so stuff like legal and accounting skills, project management.
Right.
Project management, I think, go ahead.
Yeah, marketing also?
Yep, marketing, exactly.
Go ahead, you were going to say something about project management, please.
Yeah, that was one that was really echoed by the experts that we spoke with, and it makes sense to me that you would want someone who can, manage lots of people working on tasks and keep things moving, keep things organized, keep lots of balls in the air at a time. So that's a great one that came up in both our survey results and in our interviews. And then human resources skills, so just kind of management, which I think has ties to project management, but a little more on the, actual people side.
Mm. What do you think was meant by project management? Did you flesh that out at all?
I'm looking to see if we gave any examples. We didn't flesh it out much in the quantitative, but when we spoke to our experts, they talked about the importance of, this is where the reliability and the accountability came up, I think, in the context of project management. Mm-hmm. So the importance of having the ability to hold others accountable, to get people to do great work without stepping on toes. And I think, for nonprofits especially, it's important to be really efficient. And anytime you've got a big group of people responsible for a single task, it's easy for everyone to kind of go in different directions or, lots of talking and not a lot of doing to happen. So folks with project management skills, I think, can really cut through that and keep things on track and keep everybody focused on moving in the same direction.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Transparent communications was sought by people aspiring to board service.
Yes.
What's under that?
That was very important. People want to know what the expected involvement is. So what exactly will they be doing? What will they be expected to do? And that includes, what kind of work they'll be doing, but also giving requirements. So what will they be expected to give personally? What will they be expected to raise? All of these things, people are looking for clarity. And this was kind of echoed by some of the folks we spoke with as well, who said, nonprofits tend to think that board members just understand what they're getting in for, or maybe don't care about the specifics of what they're getting in for. But it's very important to have some layer of transparency. And on the part of nonprofits, that requires maybe some extra thought into what the role will entail. So, you know, one thing that one of the experts we spoke to recommended was just actually writing up kind of a little job description to share with board members, you know, communicating really clearly what the expectations are in terms of, you know, frequency of getting together, maybe setting a schedule of meetings, like an annual schedule that you could share in advance. And then kind of relating back to what I talked about earlier, the personal fulfillment thing, it's important for nonprofits to communicate the impact that they're having. And bringing things full circle, I think that's kind of a role that technology can play, you know, helping track and also helping nonprofits disseminate information about the impact that they're having.
That's obviously that's obviously a very big topic in the community, especially now that Charity Navigator is looking for a new CEO, and what is that? What kind of priorities is that person going to bring to that organization? But yes, very interesting. And yeah, the way it ties back to technology. Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah, absolutely.
What other questions are out there? We just have like a minute and a half or so left. What other questions are out there that you'd like to answer or Software Advice is going to answer?
Sure. So, you know, I mentioned earlier, I think one further area for exploration could be digging into that personal fulfillment question a little. We got the results back and saw, oh, everybody's looking for personal fulfillment, and kind of went, well, duh. Of course, that's what people are looking for, and of course, that's what they are going to say they're looking for, but what does that mean? It probably means different things to different people.
See, I asked that question also, so that makes me a subject matter expert, you see?
Exactly. So, see, you should be a researcher.
Well, I'd rather just be interviewed. much easier. I'm not a good enforcer.
Perfect. Our goals align.
All right. Thank you very much. Just another minute. Go ahead. What else is out there?
So that was one thing. Another thing that I'm kind of interested in exploring, not necessarily in a quantitative way necessarily, but just this idea of the diversity of skill sets. You know, what is the balance that you should look for, and how do these different folks with these different backgrounds work together in the most effective ways? And are there specific types of software and technology that can be leveraged by people with specific skill sets? So, you know, should someone with accounting skills be advocating for accounting software for their nonprofit? That kind of thing. Just kind of the harmonies between the different topics that we've already started to dig into a little bit here.
Okay, excellent. You're in an enviable position because you can ask all these questions and then go research and find the actual answer based on quantitative analysis and not just based on best practices or tradition or anything else. I admire that.
Right,
love
yeah.
It. All right.
Yeah, it's a pretty exciting place to be.
Cool. Oh, my voice just cracked. Melissa McCormick, Market Research Manager at Software Advice. They are at softwareadvice.com and at NPO Soft Advice. Thank you very much, Melissa.
Thanks so much, Tony.
Oh, my pleasure. And at NPO Soft Advice, thank you very much for doing some live tweeting today. Next week, another informative NTC interview coming to the show, and Amy Sample Ward returns. If you missed any part of today's show, find it at tonymartinetti.com. No singing this week. Opportunity collaboration. The world convenes for poverty reduction. I'm warning you, it will ruin you for every other conference. Opportunitycollaboration.net. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. Sam Leibowitz is the line producer. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez. SusanChavez.com, and our music is by Scott Stein. Be with me next week for Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.
What's not to love about Nonprofit Radio? Tony gets the best guests. Check this out from Seth Godin.
This is the first revolution since TV 1950 and Henry Ford 1920. It's the revolution of our lifetime.
Here's a smart, simple idea from Craigslist founder Craig Newmark.
Yeah, in sites or in presentation or anything, people don't really need the fancy stuff. They need something which is simple and fast.
When's the best time to post on Facebook? Facebook's Andrew Noyes knows.
At traffic is at an all-time high around 9 a.m. or 8 p.m. So that's when you should be posting your most meaningful posts.
Here's Aria Finger, COO of DoSomething.org.
Young people are not going to be involved in social change if it's boring and they don't see the impact of what they're doing. So you got to make it fun and applicable to these young people, because otherwise a 15 and 16-year-old, they have better things to do. They have Xbox, they have TV, they have their cell phones.
Ami Dar is the founder of Idealist.
It took 2 or 3 years for foundation staff to sort of deign to add an email address to their card. Yes. It was like, it was phone. This email thing is right. Weird. And plus, why should I give it away?
Charles Best founded DonorsChoose.org.
Somehow they've gotten in touch, kind of offline, as it were.
Yeah.
And they'll do exchanges of brownies and visits and physical gift.
Mark Echo is the founder and CEO of Echo Enterprises. You may be wearing his hoodies and shirts. Tony talked to him.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big believer that it's not what you make in life. It's you know, it's how you make people feel.
This is public radio host Majora Carter.
Innovation is in the power of understanding that you don't just, you know, you just put money on a situation and expect it to heal. You put money on a situation and invest it and expect it to grow.
And savvy advice for success from Eric Saperstein.
What separates those who achieve from those who do not is in direct proportion to one's ability to ask others for help.
The smartest experts and leading thinkers are on Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%.